Support for this podcast and the following message comes from Duke Health, offering food, medication delivery, and transportation to communities hardest hit by COVID-19 through a special partnership with North Carolina agencies and 16 community-based organizations. Learn more about Duke's COVID-19 response at dukehealth.org.
I'm Dave DeWitt. This is Tested from WUNC, a look at what today's challenges tell us about where we are, what we believe, and who we want to be in North Carolina and the South. Today, racial injustice and law enforcement. It didn't start with Officer Derek Chauvin killing George Floyd, and it certainly hasn't ended with him. Law enforcement officers have been killing black people in America since before we were a country. And now, even as more and more of us see it with our own eyes, it continues, almost entirely without consequences, for the officers doing the killing. Some leaders are making statements and forming task forces to offer recommendations to try to unravel centuries of racial injustice within the justice system. Governor Roy Cooper set up the Task Force for Racial Equity and Criminal Justice last June. It was co-chaired by Josh Stein, the Attorney General. They released recommendations in December. For many, like Dawn Blagrove, the Executive Director of advocacy group Emancipate NC, the report was just words on a page.
These are principles that we have seen Attorney General Josh Stein speak eloquently about believing in and wanting to protect. Today, Emancipate NC is asking you to make your deeds match your words. Show us, show the people of North Carolina who put their trust in you, that you not only believe in equity, in racial justice, but that you put that belief into action by bringing real stakeholders from all avenues, both inside and out, to the table to create reports that you can share with the community about why you chose a case or why you chose to decline. This level of transparency is important, and it is necessary to moving beyond mere rhetoric of words towards action.
Police officers have shot and killed a number of Black North Carolinians in the past few years, including Janisha Fonville, Keith Lamont Scott, and Keith Collins. No officers were charged in those shootings. Those are just high-profile, tragic examples of racial injustice within our legal system.
On the task force, Attorney Stein indicated, along with many others in this community, that there is a lack of accountability for bad prosecution and for bad law enforcement officers. Yet his office has not found one case in which an officer or a prosecutor has abused the trust of the people. We find that unacceptable, and the incongruency between those words and his actions show. We want him to take this opportunity to eliminate that incongruency and show us with his actions that he believes in his own words.
So that's Dawn Blagrove, Executive Director of Emancipate NC. Now, the criticism is focused on the North Carolina Task Force for Racial Equity and Criminal Justice, like we said. That group just came out with a report and recommendations, and it was co-chaired by Attorney General Josh Stein. WUNC reporter Jason DeBruin interviewed Stein about those recommendations and the criticism. But before we get to that, let's welcome in Jason. Hey, Jason, how you doing?
Hi, thanks for having me on.
So let's start with a basic description of the North Carolina Task Force for Racial Equity and Criminal Justice. You'll get to the recommendations with the Attorney General in just a second. But first, talk about why it was started and who was on the task force.
Yeah, so it was established in June of 2020 by Governor Roy Cooper. This was obviously at the height of some of the racial demonstrations that were happening in cities across the country not long after the murder of George Floyd. Stein was one of the co-chairs. Another co-chair was Anita Earls, who is on the North Carolina Supreme Court. She's an African-American woman and was a civil rights attorney for years before she was elected in 2018. The task force was set up to, you know, as the name suggests, try to establish more racial equity in the criminal justice system. It's pretty blunt in the intro and says that the criminal justice system is not racially equitable. And then it lays out 125 different recommendations for how to achieve that equity, broken down into two sort of main buckets. One focuses on law enforcement, and the other bucket focuses on the courts, or, you know, the court system. So it's really that two-pronged approach.
Still, 125 recommendations, a pretty blunt assessment, but Emancipate NC is pretty unhappy with some of the recommendations, and specifically with Attorney General Josh Stein, who's a Democrat, pretty progressive on many issues. But Emancipate NC sort of zeroes in on what they say is his lack of holding law enforcement more accountable.
Yeah, exactly. Look, I'm sure the listeners of this podcast know about what's been happening in places like Alamance County, for instance. Reverend Greg Drumright was pepper sprayed when he was leading a group of people to the polls. That's certainly not the only incident that civil rights groups have pointed to as being problematic in Alamance County. Josh Stein was vocal, saying that what was happening there is, I think he called it problematic, or that he was concerned about what was happening. And then civil rights groups say, yeah, that's great that you're vocal about it, but go ahead and do something, right? I mean, it's one thing to say that it's bad. It's another thing to go try to correct it. So in response to some of that, Stein said that he is doing everything that he can from his position. Of course, he pointed specifically to those 125 recommendations to improve racial equity in policing, and that's kind of where we got into our interview.
We worked for months last year to identify ways whereby people will be treated better by law enforcement. Law enforcement will do a better job serving the public, and in the process of doing their job better, they'll have more support and faith by the public in their work. We have recommendations concerning public protests and how police should facilitate First Amendment protests, not squash them. I know that there were complaints made to the U.S. Department of Justice, which has the authority and staffing to do civil rights investigation. Those are powers that the legislature has not seen fit to grant to the Office of Attorney General here in North Carolina. And so that's an instance where our federal partners can do that work.
I don't have a law degree. I don't say this based on my own knowledge, but from attorneys that I've spoken with, nonprofit attorneys, civil rights attorneys, they seem to think you do have the ability to hold local law enforcement accountable in some cases and feel that you're just not. So anticipating your answer being, well, I don't have that authority, maybe explain why you don't have that authority and you know, are your hands tied or what? You know, what's the disconnect between what civil rights attorneys say that you can and should be doing and you saying that, well, I can't?
The North Carolina Constitution grants to local prosecutors, district attorneys, the ability to prosecute crimes at trial. I don't have independent or concurrent jurisdiction to bring charges against anyone. The Attorney General of North Carolina used to have, under his or her authority, the State Bureau of Investigation. A few years ago, the legislature took the SBI and moved it from the Department of Justice, which I oversee, to the Department of Public Safety under the governor's administration. So I have no law enforcement agencies and I don't have any authority to bring any charges. What I can do is use my voice and my platform to try to make the policies of North Carolina the best they possibly can be. And that's what I'm working my tail off to do, along with many other people who really want to see our criminal justice system be the best it possibly can.
Well, let's talk about maybe some of those. 125 is a lot. Or do you have maybe three or five that you think are even like the most important? Like if you could just wave a wand and have just a handful of them pass, or are there maybe a few or you know, a half a dozen maybe that you think are the most important ones?
There are so many important ones because we really need to address the deficiencies of our criminal justice system from beginning to end. So it starts with recruiting the right officers, training them the appropriate way, having the right policies that govern how they do their jobs, having meaningful accountability of officers who violate those policies. What are we doing about the juvenile justice, the school to prison pipeline? Are we trying to get kids out of the criminal justice system and into systems that can help support them and redirect them while they're young? I mean, I have adolescents, I have teenagers. Their brains are not fully formed and they need to be treated as such. We need to look at the laws. Are we unnecessarily putting people in the criminal justice system? Not only kids, but people smoking marijuana. I mean, why should that be a crime? Let's make it a citation where you get a ticket. Let's take it out of the criminal justice system so that we're not burdening people. So I can't give you two or three because we need to attack this issue holistically to root out the systemic racism that exists in our criminal justice system.
So I want to bring up the criticism levied against you by Emancipate NC just recently. I wonder if you might respond to some of those, maybe particularly, you know, they outlined six cases in which your office argued or took a position that was ultimately not the same position that was, you know, adopted by the liberal wing of the Supreme Court. You know, in some ways, I think to the folks at Emancipate NC, it feels like you might be no different or your office is no different than if it were Jim O'Neill or, you know, some other Republican AG. Maybe respond to that and outline what perhaps is different about your administration.
There's a real important distinction between what I may believe is a matter of policy and what the law of the state is. Now, I swore an oath to uphold the law of the state unless it conflicts with the U.S. or state constitutions. So there may be laws that have been enacted that as a matter of policy, I don't think are particularly wise. And in fact, there are some that I voted against when I was in the General Assembly that I'm now defending because I don't have the unilateral authority to declare laws unconstitutional. So my role is to defend. In fact, this, my statutory duty is to defend the state on appeal. Civil rights attorney and criminal law professor at North Carolina Central, Irv Joyner, I represented the NAACP in many cases. He had a statement in the story that points that out, that the role of attorney general has some institutional things that you do when you're attorney general. And that's what I signed up for, and that's what I do with fidelity to my role, my constitutional role.
Yeah, I saw his his statement, and it does make a certain sense. But on the other hand, it sort of occurs to me then, like, why even have you as an elected role? Why even have this as an elected position? Why not just be somebody that's assigned by either the governor or the legislative branch or something to that effect? I mean, one of the reasons, at least, again, a layman's perspective, one of the reasons why you're a separately elected position is because we want you to have some independent authority and some independent say in these matters.
Well, I have a lot of independence and a lot of say. I mean, I was the first attorney general to sue Juul for targeting young people with their highly addictive e-cigarette nicotine delivery devices. I am helping to lead the fight against the opioid epidemic in the state that is devastating families across North Carolina. I recognize that there was a backlog of untested sexual assault kits sitting on the shelves of local law enforcement. They don't report to me. Local law enforcement doesn't report to me. There are many things I am doing using my authority or my bully pulpit to make this a better state. And I'm proud of what we're doing to try to make our criminal justice system fair. I do not begrudge advocates who want more. And frankly, that's what their job is to press for more. And I am doing everything I can to fix the system on a policy basis. But there will always be individual cases in which they see the world differently than I do. And I'm at peace with that because I'm proud of what we're doing.
you know, all the things that you outlined, opioid, Juul, Kimmorer's, you know, laudable. I think somebody at Emancipate North Carolina and other advocates would agree, laudable. That doesn't also mean that they would find it even more laudable if you were to take maybe a stronger position for civil rights in criminal justice. And of course, you mentioned the task force and the work that you're doing, and perhaps, you know, bully pulpit, as you say, coming out with the recommendations from you certainly carry more weight than if they come from me, for instance, right? Or any number of other people. But at the end of the day, those are still just recommendations. And you are in a position of power in that you're arguing literally in front of the Supreme Court of North Carolina, whereas you and I can both make recommendations. You and I cannot both argue in front of the Supreme Court of North Carolina. And yet civil rights groups feel that when the rubber meets the road and you're actually in court making arguments, you're not making arguments in some cases that seem to match with what your recommendations are in you know, coming out of the task force.
Look, North Carolina has a law that says that domestic violence protective orders are unavailable to people of same-sex marriages. It's explicit. It has to be in an opposite sex relationship. That is unconstitutional, and that's unconstitutional. I think it's a terrible idea, but it is unconstitutional, and its unconstitutionality is incontrovertible. The North U.S. Supreme Court has spoken on that issue. So I filed a brief in North Carolina court arguing for the civil rights of gay and lesbian people because it's the right thing to do. No one forced me to do it, but it was also the constitutional thing to do. And I will do that. When the Constitution is clear and justice should be done, I will do it. I seek justice in every case, but I don't have the ability to change North Carolina law unilaterally. The courts can interpret it differently. That's their job. They play a different institutional role than I do.
We'll close that maybe with some easier ones. Let's talk again about some of the recommendations. I know there's, you know, ones that require, as you said, legislative action, ones that perhaps the governor could do through executive action, ones that police departments enact. Have you been in contact perhaps with some Republican lawmakers, or are there any of the recommendations that they seem amenable to, or have you perhaps heard from sheriffs or police chiefs that there are any of those recommendations that they're looking to enact, you know, in the near future? I guess what I'm trying to think of is, again, 125 is a lot, right? If we circle back in 3 months, is there anything that maybe we'll see actually enacted?
Yeah, we're seeing progress. Last year, it was all about recommendations. This year, we're trying to get as many of them implemented as we can. There have been probably dozens of bills introduced in the General Assembly by both Republican and Democratic legislators that have various recommendations that were made by the task force. And I will say that criminal justice reform really is one of the few issues out there that are not particularly partisan. I mean, there have been a lot of reforms have happened under the Republican General Assembly. They were the ones who raised the age of juvenile jurisdiction a couple years ago. They're the ones who dealt with new laws on expunction to help people have a second chance. So they've done some really positive things, and we look forward to seeing what the Republican legislature takes up this session and hope that they work with us to try to make everything work more fairly for all.
Josh Stein is the Attorney General for the state of North Carolina. He spoke with WUNC's Jason DeBruin. That's it for this episode of Tested. I'm Dave DeWitt. Rebecca Martinez produced this episode. Amanda Magnus is our editor. Lindsay Foster Thomas is the executive producer. Thanks for listening.